Hi, folks. This is CBD of the Cut Jib Newsletter Worldwide Podcasting and Car Wash System. I'm here today in overcast New Jersey. I had to come back for some family issues. And I'm here today, as usual, with my friend and co-blogger and co-podcaster and partner, JJ Sefton. JJ, take it away.
Thank you, CBD. And welcome, everybody, once again to the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. Here we are, lots of things going on in the world. We'll kick it off with kind of the nonsense in the Middle East, and we'll just pass over, no pun intended, the stupidity of this supposed Qatari, jumbo jet thing that President Trump is going to be using for Air Force One. But the whole negotiation strategy of Trump and the Stephen Witkoff character in trying to put some sort of grand peace deal together with Qatar, with Iran, is just it's very problematic on so many fronts, and just it makes your head shake, makes my head shake. Qatar is not a friend; they are not an ally. They house and fund Hamas, amongst other things, and I just think, you know, obviously we have a presence there in Doha with military bases, but they're just not to be trusted, and certainly Iran is not to be trusted. And as you pointed out before the broadcast, CBD, my fear and our fear is that President Trump is doing this mostly for notoriety than really for any kind of real practical sort of geopolitical gain that will benefit us and our allies in the region and the world.
So am I allowed to say just ditto? Yeah, exactly. One of the biggest issues, I think, and something that is not being discussed, unfortunately, even in the conservative blogosphere and the conservative news, is that Steve Witkoff, I think, is bought and paid for by the Qataris. He had a huge share in the Park Lane Hotel, which is a big hotel in New York City, and it was failing, and the Qatari Sovereign Wealth Fund bought him out for $623 million. This happened a couple of years ago, 2022 or 2023. I don't remember which. That in and of itself is a conflict of interest. In addition, the Qataris are in negotiations for building a golf resort with Donald Trump's company. It just looks bad. And as Sefton said, they are Donald Trump, love him or hate him, I don't really care, but Donald Trump is shooting for the deal over what is in the long-term best interests of the world and of the United States. If, let's say, the Iranian nuclear facilities are allowed to enrich to 3.27% for domestic, civilian use, blah, 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 blah. They're going to lie. They're going to cheat. They're going to steal. They're going to fake it, and they're going to build a bomb. So let's say the Iranians launch a couple of nuclear weapons on Tel Aviv, and Israel shoots them down, which is a pretty good bet. Well, what should Israel do? The only rational response is to nuke Tehran. What happens when you nuke Tehran or nuke one of the cities or destroy their entire nuclear infrastructure? What happens? Well, the Russians are going to step in, because they are intimately involved in Iran. And what does that mean? So this regional theater is rapidly going to go worldwide. And that scares the shit out of me. It's a bad idea to play games with the Iranians. You have to tell them what is going to happen and give them the opportunity to fix it or destroy their nuclear infrastructure. That is the only option. Israel understands that. But Israel can't go it alone, unfortunately. I think that Donald Trump is going for the deal more than what is best for America and the world.
Right. And as I've written, and I'm sure you've written and noted, and so many people, and even, you know, I think our friend Robert Spencer wrote a column about this, and even he was sort of, I don't know, he sort of contradicted himself in his column about this, is that Iran is not to be trusted. Iran is at the pinnacle right now of the Islamic conquest that's been going on for 1,500 years. And they don't care if Armageddon happens, because they're cheering for Armageddon to happen, because it's in line with their theocratic political philosophy to create an Islamic world. Iran is not to be trusted, and they don't need nuclear power. They're sitting on an oceans of oil. They need to be sidelined, and as a global, forget about their nuclear weapons. They are the global fomenter of most of the terrorism of the last 50 years. Thank you, Jimmy Carter, and everybody else who placated them. The Iranian government has to fall, and it has to become, hopefully, something that at least is a stable, if not obviously not a Jeffersonian democracy. We all know that nonsense, but it certainly cannot become. It cannot remain the mad theocracy that it is, and it cannot be allowed to devolve into the ISIS thing that the Assad regime has developed into. And Donald Trump is now negotiating and heaping praise on the new Syrian Islamic dictator. And this is just, you know, head scratching.
And
to
let's
the
face
extreme.
It, that Syrian dictator, al-Shara or al-Shara, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Let's face it, he's fucking Osama bin Laden in a nice suit. There's no difference. And it's absolutely insane that the United States of America is lifting sanctions on Syria. It's absolutely insane that Donald Trump is describing this man glowingly. It's a bad, bad idea. These are terrorists. They want to destroy the West. They will not stop. And I simply don't understand what Donald Trump is doing.
Right. I mean, some people who try to put a smiley face on it, and I think, I don't know if it was Robert Spencer, I don't want to accuse him, Robert, if it was you, but wrote that there was an analogy between, well, Donald Trump kind of did the same thing in the first term with Kim Jong-un, the potbelly dictator from North Korea. And where did it get us? I mean, it's like, you know, they think that this is a good thing to placate these maniacs. And I don't think so. I think they need to be confronted. They need to be, you know, isolated and neutralized economically and geopolitically as best as possible, short of a shooting war, please God, if at all possible, anywhere and everywhere. And it's up to the people to depose their own tyrants. And if, you know, in Israel, it's up to Israel to figure out what it has to do. If they figure out that Iran is, or whoever is close to going nuclear. And they've said many times that they will not allow that to happen. And come what may, I'm sure they won't. And we'll see what happens after that. But to sort of, you know, put, you know, grease the skids and to make them and to legitimize them by even talking to them without even addressing the fact of what and who they are and what they believe is just, again, going for a Nobel Peace Prize as opposed to doing the right thing. I'm sorry for all you Trump supporters out there. And believe me, I'm a big Donald Trump supporter and booster and fan, if for no other reason than just because he makes the left go crazy, but because he's actually done some good things. But this whole push is not one of them. Sorry.
I agree. You know, we can beat this dead horse forever, but
and
I think Sefton and I are on the same page on this. Let's move to domestic policies. I find it's very interesting. The Supreme Court heard some oral arguments yesterday about the Trump administration's request to lift. I'm not sure how many of those nationwide injunctions placed by our presumptive rulers in the judiciary. And it was interesting how it went. Of, you know, the usual suspects are supportive of slamming down anything that Donald Trump wants. Folks, can you guess who those people are? Kagan and Sotomayor, of course.
And sadly, Coney Barrett is in on the action too,
yeah,
or as I call her, Amy Coney Island Whitefish.
Oh my God! What the, I just don't get it. She was so impressive, right up until I realized that nah, she's just a liberal. That's all she is.
Sandra Day O'Connor, part two.
Yep. Anyway,
there you go.
They're hearing oral arguments. Roberts was modestly supportive of the Trump position. Maybe I'm being a little bit simplistic. I'm reading into that. And of course, Clarence Thomas was suspicious of both sides, which is a wonderful thing because he is a great, great Supreme Court justice. Folks, Clarence Thomas is one of the great Supreme Court justices of our history.
Agreed. He truly is a champ. He is and a great American and everything. And he is literally the antithesis of what the left is on every level. And they hate him probably hate him as much, if not more, than a Donald Trump, because he's a black man who saw the left for what it was, broke away from it, and left the plantation. And they cannot abide by that. He's actually even more dangerous in a way than Donald Trump.
Yeah. One of the things that really, really frustrates me about the Supreme Court is they dig down into the weeds and start talking about the effects of laws. And that is not their job. Their job is to decide whether the law is constitutional or unconstitutional. That's all they need to do. Jumanji Jackson was talking about how if they curtail nationwide injunctions, it would make it more difficult for people to sue and to, you know, to pursue their rights. Well, I don't care. That has nothing to do with it. Is it constitutional for these justices, these judges rather, to file nationwide injunctions against the administration? That's the only question. It doesn't matter what the law is.
No, they're usurping their authority. They have no, they can't be the plaintiff and the judge at the same time. What that's insanity. I mean, just to issue a rule. I mean, and now the next phase, which is, God bless Donald Trump for being brave enough to bring this up, for trying to put the kibosh on the bastardization of the 14th Amendment, which applies only to the children of freed slaves and has nothing to do with someone wetback who comes across the river, spreads her legs, and spawns on our shores. Their spawn is not an instant American citizen. I'm sorry. And that has been bastardized to hell for forever. And
I'm reminded of something that I read Antonin Scalia said many years ago. Another great Supreme Court justice.
Oh yes.
And there was a case before the Supreme Court. It was about some vile rapist or child molester who was claiming that he had been deprived of his rights. And the question wasn't his guilt or innocence. It was clear that he was guilty. And Scalia voted for the vindication of this man because he felt that the law said one thing and he had been afforded something different. And he said, listen, if I were God, I'm paraphrasing horribly, I apologize, folks. If I were God, I'd have this guy killed, or he'd be in jail for the rest of his life. But I'm not God. I simply have to hold according to what the Constitution says. That's wonderful. That's exactly what they are supposed to be doing. And so few of them do it.
Yeah, it's right. Or, and you know, obviously there are, it's you know, the pressures on these people to not, I mean, because obviously the left will organize, you know, political repercussions against them, if not actual physical violence, as we saw with Brett Kavanaugh and his family when they were threatened, or when Chuck Schumer literally threatened the lives of the justices if they were to dare overturn deliver the Dobbs decision. And so it's understandable why they're in fear. But then again, if you're in fear before you take that oath to become a justice, then if you've, you know, look, no one's going to hold it against you. If you'd rather not face the pressure, then don't. It's understandable. But then if you take that seat, you take that oath, you better understand what's on the other end if you don't do the right thing, or do the right thing, I should say.
Yeah. So here's another, I just noticed on my news feed that a judge he dismissed charges against some illegal immigrants who are accused of crossing into a military zone on the southern border. Some chief U.S. magistrate Judge Gregory Warmoth, whoever the fuck that is, and who cares what he is. You know, it's becoming increasingly obvious that most of the judiciary is completely in the bag for a progressive mindset, the progressive policy, really, of the destruction of the United States of America. And the easiest way to do that, of course, is to have an open border and to let these people in and let them repopulate America with government-loving, soft, acquiescent drones. And that's what we're getting. And these judges are very, very supportive of it. And I find it
and
odd.
Worse. They'll become worse than drones. They'll become the enforcers of leftist juntas from here till the end of time. get out of line, and there's your Antifa. Antifa with a Spanish or a Chinese or an Arabic accent.
So what else is going on?
I think we've pretty much, because we wanted to kind of keep it short for other reasons, I think that pretty much covers the waterfront so far. Meanwhile, I mean, just on a good news for Donald Trump, the predictions of doom and disaster because of the tariff sanctions on our economy have been now completely proven to be completely overblown. The producer price index is down, unemployment is down, and you know, and the recession that everyone was supposedly touting looks like it is not going to happen. So there you have it.
JP Morgan just came out with some corrections, not corrections, but you know, updated guidance that they no longer expect a recession, and they were predicting a recession at 60%. So they've changed that. I think Goldman Sachs changed their outlook. It's clear that the tariffs are modestly damaging at worst to our economic outlook. And honestly, these tariffs are immensely complicated, and they have second and third and fourth order effects on our economy and other economies. So for somebody to confidently predict how they're going to shake out in the next 6, 12, 24 months or 20 years is absolutely ridiculous. That's arrogance beyond belief. They simply can't. As data are accumulated, then they can start speaking possibly accurately about the effects of these tariffs. But they're clearly not the Armageddon that the left was hoping for.
No, I mean, I could just as easily predict, oh, wow, you know what the tariffs are going to do? We're going to have a revitalized steel industry and a revitalized textile industry, and we're going to create millions and millions and millions of jobs and bring them on back. I mean, yeah, it's nice to think that, but I mean, you know, there's no way to accurately predict that. I mean, that's what we're hoping for, but you know, it's just as easy for me to be Pollyanna than it is for them to say, be Chicken Little and say the sky is falling. But there you have it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And by the way, the textile industry, that's a very interesting thing. You know, you can go to Walmart or order on Amazon or wherever, you know, cheap online or cheap brick and mortar companies, very, very inexpensive linens. You know, if you want to buy some new sheets for your bed, you can get them for $20. Who the hell knows? On the other hand, there are American producers of, I think, higher quality, much higher quality linens, and they're significantly more expensive. And what struck me was I don't know how much it costs to produce a pillowcase or a fitted sheet or whatever the hell it is, you know, whatever people buy. I don't know how much it costs because the difference between the ridiculously low cost stuff that's coming out of China and Vietnam and India, that's very, very possibly subsidized heavily by those governments, and the American products, it's huge. What is the true cost? What is the true cost to the consumer, and what is the markup? And I'm sort of rambling about this, but I find that very interesting. And textiles are exactly the perfect thing to look at because I just don't know.
Well, and of course, slave wages. You know, when you have prison labor camps all over Southeast Asia and China. You know, but of course, yes, we have the usual gang of idiots calling for reparations for black people who were born 150 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. But of course, they don't shed a tear for you know, for some indigent in a slave labor camp on the Yalu River. Forget it. No, sorry.
You know, my people were enslaved by the Egyptians for 400 years. Where are my reparations?
Yeah, I got mugged by two black guys, you know, in 1981. Do I get reparations from Jasmine Crockett or no? I mean, but in all seriousness, you know, my mother of blessed memory was a Holocaust survivor, and she was entitled for her literal slave labor to reparations. And I see online now in places that even me or I, as a second generation of a survivor, am entitled to some sort of reparations. And I'm going, how am I entitled to that? I think it's maybe it's a scam as an identity theft thing, but I would never even apply for that. I, in good conscience, I wasn't there. I wasn't, I mean, yes, the holiday of Passover and its meaning notwithstanding, I was not a prisoner in Mauthausen like my mother was, and in the labor brigades in Vienna. So I'm not going to get a take a dime from that. And anybody who claims otherwise is just, I mean, it's just, it's disgusting. But there you have it.
Yeah. So in local news, and this amuses me immensely, the New Jersey transit engineers are going on strike. They are on strike today. And if you don't know, folks, and there's no reason for you to know because it's not that important, New Jersey Transit funnels a huge number of commuters into New York City every day. They have train lines that go into Penn Station. And then from farther south, they go into what is called the PATH system. And that's how a lot of people get into New York City from New Jersey. So it's going to be a massive clusterfuck. And I've got to laugh because this is essentially, it's a quasi-government organization. And their pay is decided upon, in essence, by the government. And it's a very, very easy way for the government to buy votes. So they're probably going to pay off the New Jersey Transit engineers with some obscene contract. And in return, they hope to get votes from these men. And that is proof positive that municipal unions, government employee or quasi-government employee unions are evil. They should not exist. They should be outlawed.
Even FDR railed against them, if you can believe it, amazingly. And of course, all the union dues, I'm sure a very large chunk of that goes to the campaign coffers of the DNC. You can bet your life on that.
So in happier news,
yes.
Today in history, 1966.
Where
how
were
about
you,
you old folks? Tell me what album was released today, 1966, a superb album. Fantastic album.
Huh.
Oh, you're stumped. Yeah.
Well,
Beach
was it a
Boys.
Be was it was, it wasn't a was it a it wasn't a Beatle album. 67 would have been Sergeant Pepper,
yeah,
but that's
no,
in the summer.
They did release something in 66, I think. I don't remember.
It was well
I was
yeah,
I was
well,
very young at the time.
Was,
no,
I,
Pet
we're, I'm
Sounds.
six years old.
Yeah, Pet
so what
Sounds.
was the album?
Beach Boys,
Pet
Beach Boys.
Sounds.
Yeah. Great album. Fantastic
It was a
album.
great album and a groundbreaking album.
Yeah.
And the Beatles influenced the Beatles heavily with Sergeant Pepper, for those of you playing at home.
Yeah. So what
Amazing.
else is going on?
That is pretty much it from our end. You know, the border is still a mess. We're still going to see what happens with all these rulings and all these tyrannical insurrectionist judges. And of course, James Comey decided to threaten Donald Trump with seashells on the seashore.
Jesus
Like
Christ!
a vault.
Send
What a
that.
what a
Send that
lanky
puke
hunk
to
of
jail.
lanky hunk of piss. He
Yeah.
really is.
Yeah. Hey, Cloak, in your neck of the woods, that judge, she pleaded not guilty to helping
Yeah,
that wetback
Dugan.
evade the immigration agents.
Yeah, of course. Surprise,
Yeah,
surprise.
I know. I wonder what'll happen. I
Well,
would
if
love
the
to
case,
see her in jail for 5 years.
you know, well, if the case goes to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, now that the Wisconsin Supreme
Yeah.
Court is solidly leftist, yeah, she'll get the Wisconsin Cheesehead Medal of Freedom, I'm sure. What a state of affairs, my God.
So I've unfortunately been flying in and out of Newark Airport quite a bit. And again, folks, if you follow this at all, you will know that the air traffic control system that controls Newark Airport is a bit of a mess. They get God, I don't know how to describe it. It's a complex system, but a lot of the control, it comes out of Philadelphia, and the connection between Philadelphia and Newark is sort of wonky and has been for a while. And adding into that is some maintenance being done on the airport. So one of the runways is closed. So the upshot is that Newark Airport is a shit show. Well, United Airlines, which is by far the biggest airline flying out of Newark, cut a bunch of flights. And I got to say, it's lovely now. It's not crowded. Planes are landing on time. They're taking off on time. It's really, really nice. I actually had to go through immigration and or customs and immigration, whatever they call it. And it was effortless. Now, it usually is effortless, but it was more effortless this time. So I
Well,
think,
just
as
put a
that,
just put a
most.
Jose Jimenez accent on, and they'll let you right in.
There you go. There you go. But my point is that they can bitch and moan about, the decaying system, and they're correct. The system is decaying and needs to be rebuilt. That's obvious. But my guess is that they were simply pushing the schedules a little too hard, and that has, downstream effects that are just ugly, when you look at the air traffic control system in the area and also throughout the country.
Right. And of course, Newark, it's not just Newark, but of course you have not very far away is LaGuardia and Kennedy airports,
And
and then
Philadelphia Airport, yeah. So
Philly,
there are
exactly. So
major
it's like,
airports within
I
about
mean,
85 miles, I would say. Five
yeah, that
major
is just
airports.
right. That's crazy. So, and it's amazing that it hasn't been more of a disaster than it already is physically and figuratively. But anyway,
Yeah.
on that cheery note, we wish you
So,
all very
yeah.
good weekend, and thank you for listening, and thanks for the support, and CBD, stay safe.
I will stay safe, folks. We'll be back next week with a slightly longer podcast. We're hoping that you'll enjoy a sort of I don't know, a smash and grab. But how would you describe a quick podcast?
Well, smash and grab
I like smash and grab. Anyway,
smash and
folks,
grab
thank you very much for listening.
a quickie.
Thank you for hitting the tip jar. Thank you for commenting at Cutchip Newsletter and, of course, at Ace of Spades, where both Sefton and I write. And we will see you next week. Cheers.